around the world, this is Paper Cuts with Brad and Jay.
I'm the one you love. I'm Jay. Thanks so much for stopping by. Over there's Brad. It's his show.
It's his show. That's why I'm the host, and we just love Jay.
Now you know it's all natural. I mean, you know, nothing's rehearsed, right?
No, absolutely nothing is rehearsed on this show.
God, you just suck the life out of me. This feels like
you've got a lot grayer since we started this.
I have.
Joining us this evening, welcome to the program, Rowan Hill. We are live.
Hey there, what's happening, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Paper Cuts. Happy Saturday to everyone. Thanks for joining us. Brad, it's Saturday. How'd your college team do today?
They won. They did terrible in the first half, but second half, they did pretty good. So,
yay.
Came away with the W, so that's all that matters.
They're still playing high school teams, right?
No, middle school teams, Jay.
Okay, I just want to make sure. That's Bradford over there. I'm Jay. Tonight, we have a writer who, Brad, I think she's too smart to be on the show. I don't know how this happened. I was looking at some background stuff with her, and I think she knows like 1,000 different languages. Rowan Hill's with us this evening. Hello, Rowan. How are you? Aside from the difficulties.
Oh, my gosh. I'm still so embarrassed about that. I apologize. No. I'm the reason
there's
why
nothing on this show anyone should be embarrassed about on this show.
Being
on the show in general should be embarrassing.
Yeah, the show itself is sometimes a little embarrassing. Yeah.
I do not think highly of StreamYard right now, whatever this system is.
Ouch. There were not.
I'm well. Thank you for asking. I obviously do a really good job of hyping myself up if you think I'm too smart and I know 1,000 languages. That's pretty cool.
We'll get into that. There might be a test later. I'm joking. So what are you normally doing on a Saturday besides trying to fix your computer and talking to two bozos with microphones over here?
I usually do write. Saturday nights, I have a day job. So Saturday nights are pretty relaxed because I'm just so worn out after the week. And I usually do a marathon of something. You know what? Saturday nights, I usually do stay up quite late because no one else in my house likes scary movies. And it's like the one time where I can watch scary movies. And it's usually from like 10 to 1 o'clock, 1 a.m. is when I get my scary movie fix for the night. So I'm a homebody now. It wasn't always that
agenda?
Way.
What are you watching tonight? What movie are you gonna
I think I was going to finish Interview with a Vampire series. That was a really good series. I really enjoyed it. And it was a lot, I wouldn't say the word scary, but it's a lot more, it expands a lot more on the movie and it's quite enjoyable.
I didn't realize there was a series, to be honest with you.
It's
on AMC.
But if you have HBO or Max now, they are showing it on there for a limited time, I think.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I may have to look it up.
FYI.
Yeah. Red, she's watching everyone sleep through the window. Red goes in the house tonight, and she says you're watching people sleep through the window from 10 to 1. Most people are sleeping.
So. Red is my like planted audience.
The mail.
She knows she's like my, we are friends and we do stuff like outside of writing. And so she's like, I'm so nervous. No one's going to be there. She's like, all 12 of my personalities are going to be there. So you're fine.
Tim McGregor's in with us too. Tim, good evening.
Hi, Tim. Tim is a very nice man. Oh, Jay, before I forget, please. Let me say something. Okay, Jay, you do not know this because I have never told you because we don't really, we've never been live on camera. But you hold like one of my core memories about writing. It's a good thing. And about a year ago, you reviewed my first novella, In the Arctic Sun, and it was my first time hearing anyone speak about my writing, and you were so nice and kind and said all these wonderful things, and it was real joy watching you for like 5 minutes trying to talk about this book, but you can't say anything about this book without giving any away spoilers.
Right.
And it was so like a year later, thank you for doing that. It was quite nice of you and chivalrous.
Oh yeah. You're welcome. Yeah. I remember the book. It was Always Sunny. Nonstop sun, obviously. I look back at some of my reviews every now and then, and I think they're a little cringy at times.
No. How cringy. Don't say that about yourself. It was great. It's like, I remember it. It meant something to me.
Your beard was less gray, Jay. Your beard was
Yeah. I didn't have as much gray back then. I probably was messing with some lighting and stuff and trying to be fancy and artsy. And yeah.
No.
Well, I mean,
it was good.
So, I mean, we can start there since you brought it up. I know we're going to talk about your new book, Foxfire, but In the Arctic Sun, that was your first release?
Yeah, that was Norella, my first long piece that was published. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that was from D&T, right? If I remember.
It was. Correctly. It was at the start of when they were, it was like in their first, it was their first open call of just like their first year of doing novellas.
Right. I remember I was actually reviewing for them for a handful of months, and that was one of the first ones that got sent to me to review. Yeah. Cool. Brad, you haven't read that one yet, have you?
I have not, but I did have something to mention. So with Foxfire and In the Arctic Sun, they both take place in the Arctic. So do you like that setting, the snowy setting, the cold weather and everything?
It's not just, I mean, it's not the Arctic. It's the extreme environments. Like I also have a few short stories that are set in Antarctica. But I do enjoy like those very extreme isolated places where not many people go to, because you know, everything's, who knows what could be up there. Have you been up there? No.
I don't plan on going there either, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I have no desire to go up there.
Oh no, yeah. It's wonderful. I mean, it should be on everyone's bucket list.
But it's cool because in the Arctic Sun.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, In the Arctic Sun, it was set where the sun was always up. It was sunlight at midnight. But Foxfire, it's the opposite. It's like, 1 o'clock in the afternoon and it's dark already. So I like how you're hitting both ends there. Just
thank you.
I picked up on that.
I was wondering if anyone would pick up on that, but thank you for picking up on that. Yeah, two different extremes, and they're both kind of horrific in their own way. I enjoyed it. I like it.
So have you traveled to not necessarily the Arctic, but up north, like Alaska and everything, Canada?
I mean, I actually do you know what? I actually have Alaska's on my bucket list, but with Foxfire, it came around because I had done like 2 years of isolation of COVID, and we were about to leave Europe. I was living in Sicily, and which is the very bottom of Italy. It's like the soccer ball of the Italian boot, right? And so I was about to leave Italy, and I had been there for like 2.5 years. And I was like, I got to get something off of my bucket list. And going up to like Lapland was like on there, and seeing the Northern Lights was a big one for me. So I just, I did it. I finally pulled the plug and went up there. And this is like, it was so awe-inspiring, that location. I don't see how anybody can travel up there and not write a book about it.
I would love to go see the Northern Lights. I think that would be just an awesome experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Canada gets them all the time.
Do they?
Yeah. You're not that far away.
I mean,
up to Canada.
I don't know if I'm going to take a big trip around the world to see them, but I'll just watch them on TV. I'll just look up YouTube videos. That's just me. Mm-hmm.
So what is it like? Is it magnetic rays or what is it that causes the lights?
No, the aurora borealis. Yes, it is. Red is going to roast me if I get anything wrong here. It is essentially solar flares from the sun, and so there's a reason why you can only see them at the north and south is because of the way they hit our magnetic field, Earth's magnetic field. So that's why you can only see them, is because it's like skimming a rock on a pond, you know? Right. And yes, so that's it. It's essentially just the impact of that kind of radiation, I think, against our magnetic field. That's pretty cool. I'm like a light science nerd. I can tell you why. I can't necessarily give you the details on it.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
did you see the northern lights first before writing the book, or was this always a concept you had in your brain?
Do you know what? I think I probably remember the exact time when I thought of, I have to write something. I was in this hotel area, and hotel is a really strong word. It's a place where they give you a nice place where they give you an igloo to sleep, and you got to walk through the forest to the main lodge, just like in the book.
That really exists? That's real?
It does. It does really exist.
Wow. Okay.
This book is 100% authentic. Everything in this book is what they have up there. And I was walking through, and this particular lodge in Lapland had this gigantic art statue. It had to be 30 feet tall, of this reindeer. And it was made out of wood, like pieces of cast off wood, all kind of shaped together to make this reindeer. And it was just in the middle of the forest. I guess people were intended to walk by it on their way. And it was just me at 6 p.m. So it was pitch black at this time.
Right.
And I stopped and I looked at it, and then I walked forward towards it. And at that time, there was a reindeer hiding in the tree line that I couldn't see. And it shot across this little clearing and ran near this deer. I'm like, oh, dang, that's it. And I saw this reindeer. I'm like tweeting about Stephen Graham Jones. I found your, I found your lost reindeer or your deer out here. And, yeah, everything in the book is reindeer, dog sledding, just walking for miles and never be found, the plod, plod, plod of snow. Everything is on there. And it was, I really didn't need any imagination for this at all.
So this is going to sound weird. This is going to sound weird, but what do the igloos actually look like? Because I'm picturing the cartoon igloos that's just made out of ice. You know,
like a half dome.
Okay. No. Because when I was reading it, I was thinking when they were talking about it, I was like, wait a second.
I hope I did a good job kind of detailing them in the book, but they are just, it's like the shape of an igloo, except probably much, much bigger. And it's the top half is just all glass, square panels of glass. So you can lay in bed and look up, and around chest height, around the whole circumference is curtains, I guess. And you can pull them back if you want to see, but can you eat in them?
No. Is there heat? Do they have heat?
Oh, heat. Yes. They are all heated.
Because I mean, the old, you know, growing up, you see cartoon igloos, and if you have a fire in one, it's melting. You know, come on. I'm not well traveled. Okay.
It's modern, sophisticated igloos. They are heated. Yep, great. They have their own bathrooms. They're wonderful. There's something really exotic about them. And yeah, it was really cool just to lay and look up at the stars and the Reventulette.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad you said that because there was no way I was pronouncing that correctly.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right either.
What is it?
My brain like wants to, because it looks like it's French. Like the Tule, but then I'm like, oh, it can't be like the Finnish are like really all hard vowels and strong consonants. So I'm gonna say Reventulette. I'm gonna go with that. Like pronounce
it's like a thousand times better than I would have tried.
I would have tried out loud at least. You know, I would just.
We could just say foxfire. Foxfire is the foxfire. English word for
it. Right. So like all different names like. The Northern Lights and Foxfire and Aurora and what you just said, I'm not even going to try. Is that the same word for all? Is that different words for the same thing?
Yeah. So we have Aurora Borealis in the north and Aurora Australis, which sounds like Australia, which means like southern land in Antarctica. It's all the same thing.
I didn't know there was two different names for it. That's cool.
Yeah. Science is cool.
Can you actually like, you're talking about like sort of being magnetism and stuff. Can you actually feel it in the air? Like, is there a feeling to it?
I have tried to research this and I honestly did not come up with an answer. I know it messes up with electrical signals, right? And I'm guessing if you like had a lot of metal on you.
I was gonna say, if you have, you know, my metal plate in my head might, you know.
I definitely wouldn't want to like be the owner of a pacemaker.
Yeah, I was gonna say, right. Pacemaker.
But you can't feel it on the ground. No, okay. You would have to be like up in the air for that. But
I bet it messes with like cell phone stuff.
Only really, really strong stuff.
Okay.
Really, really strong Aurora.
I didn't know if it was like static in the air or like it would make the hairs on your arm stand up or anything like that.
It would be really cool. The Aurora that I saw was quite weak, but even that was very mesmerizing, like a view, as a view. But as a, like, as a flare, it wasn't very strong. But I would really, I mean, I imagined it to be quite moving experience. And I just, like, wrote it about it. It's like, this is an amazing experience. You can nearly feel it.
So are they all, is it always green or is it changed? Because in the book you have green,
there are
it's
many,
sort of red sometimes.
There are many different colors. Yeah, and for some reason they all, there's different colors at the different poles. I forget the reason for it though, but like you can get like streaks of red down there. There's gold. I forget the other colors, but no, it's not just green. But that is like the most common.
So I like the fact that you took the Northern Lights, something that people travel far from afar to look at, to check out. But then you create this folklore horror slasher type survival horror story. So you take something that's nice from, you know, people love, and you turn it into a horror story. How did this happen for Foxfire?
I feel like all authors do that for like everything. You know, a lot of it, there is folklore about Reventulette, the Aurora Borealis. And there's so many stories in Finnish and what's the other countries up there? Sweden and Norway. They have so many legends. And the one about Foxfire is that it is made by a fox jumping through the sky. Oh gosh, I even forget like the full legend. But and his tail creates the Foxfire. And I just like that legend. Like when I got down the rabbit hole of Finnish legends, there's so much cool stuff up there. Like this is where like the area where Thor came from, you know? And there's, they have so many other gods up there that you can just like, hey, okay, there's a god up here who was a healer. And then they all started to fight over this magical box and the Sampo. And then they all just suddenly started to kill each other and fight for eternity. And I thought it was a, I tried to incorporate, I tried to learn as much as I can as an outsider. And be respectful to it, but
I was going to ask how much research did you have to go into to
I mean as much as like as much as I can as like a person not living in Finland and like just has the internet for research. I did ask I asked for a few Finnish beta readers and no one voiced any objections. The only the only objection I got was oh, we would never eat this type of food hot, we always eat it cold. And I was like, all right, if no one's like objecting that I'm like disrespecting their culture by saying, by like using this, you know, cosmic horror god, then that's good. I don't want to spoil it. I don't want to spoil any.
Yeah, don't give anything away.
Right, but I know, it's pretty graphic. So hard. Just from the get-go, it's pretty graphic. Okay, just with the, an animal and okay, I won't go into detail.
Oh, are you talking about the first page? At the beginning?
Yes.
the first page.
Yes.
You know what?
Like I started reading, I was like, "What's going on? Why? Why?"
Okay, I'm going to put this at the feet of Andrew from Dark Lit Press. he once read something of mine and said, oh, it's really it, like you need to pick up the pace. And I was like, and I kind of like took it as like a challenge, like I'm gonna show you how fast I can go. And so I'm just like killing something in the first like five lines.
Nice.
It was a lot in the beginning. Like, just because I'm not a hunter. Okay, that's pretty obvious. And I know where our meat comes from and all, but still.
I'm so sorry. It was a lot. No one said that.
It was fine. It was fine. It was fine. We'll move on.
Did she traumatize it's back in my you, head. Jay?
Yeah. Now it's back in my. I'm now picturing it again. So.
Poor Rudolph. Rudolph didn't make it.
Yeah, my youngest will be reading this anytime soon.
I did love the inclusion of all the Finnish folklore and the different gods and stuff, because I love that type of folklore and that history with different cultures. So I thought that was really interesting. Like the I'm not even gonna try to pronounce them because I'll mess them up too. Lempo and Otso the Bear King and all that kind of stuff. I love all that kind of stuff.
It is pretty cool. I don't know how much I can write about that though. Like, it's so hard to understand. Like, you could really go down a rabbit hole with Finnish folklore because, like, I read so many things that were contradictory, but it turns out it's just like two different versions. And you're like, well, I don't know what to believe, so I'm just gonna leave it out.
Yeah.
It also it lends like this great sense of place because it could have just been, you know, generic. It's cold and snow outside, but adding all that folklore in really puts it in the specific setting, being in Lapland or Finland or wherever you said it. So I like that. it brings like an extra gravitas to the story that maybe wouldn't have been there if you didn't include, you know, all the folklore stuff.
Gravitas.
I gotta use a big word every now and then. Kind of sounds smart.
His wife got him an Award of the Day dictionary for Christmas last year.
No, that's a great word. I love that word.
Word of the Day toilet paper. Is that what it is? Yeah.
I love it when it's referenced to me.
So it's just like folklore in general. Is that something you're interested in, or was it more just for the specific story you're researching it?
No, I think everybody has like interest in folklore because most folklore is pretty awesome and fun. I mean, old stories are in general, I find, go a lot harder. Like Beowulf, like the first story, That's pretty, once you get past like the language difficulties of like understanding how they wrote, it's pretty, I mean, folklore is, their stories are all, I haven't really read a piece of folklore that wasn't like cool. So it's not that I have an interest, a particular interest in folklore, but I just find it interesting in general when I come across it. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
It lends great to like horror stories too, because it's always like some creature or god or whatever it is, and that blends right with horror.
Let's see here. There's one I'm thinking of. Go ahead while I'm looking it up here.
No, I think you're right. Horror and folklore. I mean, folk horror.
Folklore,
it's like
yeah.
its own genre now. But there's so much mystery about it that you could write about it, and lends itself to that sort of what's going to happen, like the anticipation aspect of being like crafting horror well.
Mm-hmm. Baba Yaga. That's what I was
trying to say. Baba Yaga.
Yeah, that's
the witch with the, she's got the house with the chicken feet.
That's what I see a lot of.
Are you thinking about the Black Shuck book anthology from last
no,
year?
No, I'm thinking Kev Harrison wrote one about Baba Yaga a couple years ago. I really got
it. What was it called?
The Balance.
The Balance right? is what
the
he
Balance,
wrote.
And it had the old woman's face. Yeah, I never read that one.
That's pretty interesting. It's very folklore horror Baba Yaga in it. So
it's just so fun to say.
It is. Baba Yaga. She's cool. She's got a lot of cool mythos around her. She's an interesting character.
Yeah, absolutely.
So with this, did you plan on from the beginning having like so much folklore included? Because it really feels just like a straight up slasher up until like a certain point without giving too much away. So was that like the plan from the beginning, or did you want it to be a straight slasher and it changed along the way? Or
well, you know, I really am a fan of Agatha Christie. Mm-hmm. And when I had all these characters, I realized like, oh, this is kind of like an Agatha Christie like setup.
Yeah, totally.
And then I realized, well, I'm writing horror. I need to like make this more Quentin Tarantino's Agatha Christie.
Yeah.
And I actually, when I was trying to sell this, I was like, oh, it's like The Hateful Eight times Agatha Christie times The Ritual. And I didn't plan on doing what I did, but I knew I had to kind of really make it different, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like a straight up slasher, we all know slashers. I am a big believer of mashing genres, like taking a dice and see what two genres like come up and seeing how you can mash them. And I really enjoyed cosmic horror, and I do like a good slasher. Like I was a teen of, you know, the Scream era, and I know what you did last summer. So I really do enjoy that premise of you don't know who is the killer in the room. Right. So taking all of these like facets and knowing that I had to do something original with them, I like rolled the dice. I'm like, you know what? This is a perfect place for cosmic. And we've got all this folklore and ancient legends. And we have this miraculous like celestial event of, celestial or is it terrestrial? I don't know. That's a good question. Red, do you know that?
Red.
Red, are you paying attention?
Is Aurora Borealis celestial or is it a terrestrial event? Because it's on Earth, but it's in the sky. I don't know. That's really interesting. So I knew
Red's
Googling
it right now.
I know. Red she says both.
She says both. Oh, that's a cheat answer, Red. You can't say that. That's cheat. You gotta pick one.
I'm gonna say celestial. I'm gonna go with celestial because
I'll say celestial.
Because when I think of terrestrial, I'm thinking of like
outer space.
from another place.
I'd say celestial because it's in like our atmosphere is what's causing it, the colors and stuff.
Yeah, but celestial means heavens.
Look, you want to get... All right, we're going to stop this. So, we're going to do some research right now.
Let's move on. We can move on.
Red but, says it's because it's an interaction of Earth's atmosphere and particles from the solar wind. Can't have the northern lights without solar wind.
That's Red's a good so smart. Answer. Yes, I will say that. Okay, does that answer your question, Brett? I forget what the question was.
Nice. Hey, why don't you put the cover up real quick, Brad, so that was cool. Look at it.
Oh my gosh, it's so beautiful, isn't it? There's a story behind this cover.
Hold on. Leah,
so when I first wrote this book, like I have been so lucky in indie horror that I was like, I have an idea for a cover. And the publisher usually is very good about, you know, helping me make it happen. And so with this cover, as soon as I finished the book, I searched online on Instagram for artists who were doing this sort of stuff, like with Aurora Borealis. And I found a small artist, and he or she or they, I don't know their gender or if they don't have a gender. They're called Korpi Illustrations, and they did all of Finland's national parks, like the sort of posters you find in like a tourist shop.
Oh, okay.
And it was such a unique style. It was like this two-tone style. And I loved it. And so I like quickly wrote to this artist like, hey, like, do you do commissions? Like, I'm not asking you for a commission, but like just in the future. And they said, yeah, sure. And I stalked this artist for a year, just always like checking up on him to make sure they were still doing things. And luckily by the time Bayou Wolf Press, picked up Foxfire, I was like, hey, I have an artist in mind and I know exactly what I want. I want this person to make it happen. And this person, you can't see it because it hasn't been released yet, but the full jacket, it's like the front cover and the back cover is like all one piece of art. It's so beautiful. And like, he is really, he does Easter eggs in his artwork really well. And so like, you can see like, if you like use a microscope, you can see like two reindeer running away up in the back fields, and you can see like the constellations in the sky, and you might be able to see a monster in there. And there's like on the other end, there's like a set of fox tracks running through the snow. And yeah, there's a lot of things that I love about this cover. And cool. He was so patient. He was so patient with me. They were so patient with me. Like I would be like writing back and like, hey, can you change this? And it would take like a week for us to, this artist is just amazing. If anybody listening ever wants any folk art done, like, I cannot recommend Korpi Illustration enough. I hope they get I hope a lot of people see this artwork because they worked really hard on it. And I think it's beautiful. I love it.
You mentioned the publisher, Bayou Wolf Press, right?
Yes.
They were fine that you already had an artist for the cover and everything. Or did you have to like speak talk to them and using it too?
Yeah, no, they I mean, I have been so lucky that even with D&T and Don Noble, I like drew a sketch of like what I wanted for the cover. And I really love the cover. Don did such a great job too. But yes, I have found that if you come to, in my experience, if you come to an indie publisher with an idea of what you want on the cover and it's affordable, then yeah, they're gonna try to make it happen. So with D&T, they already had Don, and I just gave Don like my sketch and like the outline I wanted it, and he just made it pop. And with this, with Bayou Wolf, she reached out to the artist, Elizabeth Jillian, and she like, hey, what's your price range? And it was very, very reasonable. It's probably too reasonable. He probably could have charged a little bit more. And yeah, it was, that happened. So this is the great thing I think about indie publishers. And I said it, I think I've tweeted about this before, is that artistic license, you know, I have so much right. artistic freedom in the book and also what the book looks like. And it pops this time. It really, I'm so proud of how this came together.
I love the color palette on it. The colors are great.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, but so this is a Finnish artist. So mm-hmm. That's, I mean, it's also like another thing that why I like kind of gravitated towards this artist is because they have so much experience mm-hmm. in the Foxfire that they have, I've seen his other artwork for it, and it is so good.
That's cool. I saw it's you. A Finnish story with a Finnish artist doing the cover. That's really cool. Right.
Mm-hmm. I hope, yeah.
I saw you were able to get Laurel Hightower to do a little snippet, little quote for it.
I know. Oh my gosh. I mean,
you totally went with the heavy hitter. Okay. So you're like, well, yeah? I'm gonna get somebody huge to do it. And states that she like best elements of a tense, well-paced thriller with compelling folklore and horror all in the stark, deadly and glittering setting of the frozen north. So I mean, that really captures, I think, the whole story in a nutshell. Just add some blood to it and that's what you have. You have it. So.
I know. I guess I'm trying to put myself out there a lot more. I'm a little bit of an introvert, which maybe all writers are to some extent. And so I just contacted people that I really like as people, not just writers. So like, I mean, obviously we're so many writers, we're all making such great things, but also people that I genuinely like would be friends with. And I'm friends with Kenzie. And I would love to be friends with, like, I wish I could meet up with Tim at some time. And I've met Laurel a few other times, and she's just like the most good-hearted person you would ever meet. And she probably, that's probably why she didn't say no. It's because she's just
nice. She's not, she's an honorary member of the show. So she's cool.
Oh, yes. I was very thrilled when they said they would blurb it. And I like Tim's too. Tim's is like short. I forget what he wrote about it. It's like jet fuel or something.
it is like jet fuel because it doesn't stop it. It's quick the whole time.
Yes, I do find it's quick. This book does move very fast.
Yeah, a lot of characters, and you did an interesting way to kind of introduce the characters too. I mean, they were introduced in that first part, but then the titles of the chapters for their names too. Mm-hmm. And I found that interesting because you gave like a little bit of a background, and it works for Foxfire. I've read books before where that annoyed me because it was too in depth about that person and each chapter, but for Foxfire, it was just enough just to get their personality and get a little bit of their background. So I like the way you kind of set it up. There was a lot of characters in there. And I won't say we all made it to the end. So,
yeah, thank you for saying that. I wasn't sure if his work, like, it didn't feel right to do numbers, chapter one, chapter two, like, because the story is from like so, like eight perspectives, right?
Right.
So, you kind of have to have the continuity of the storyline through eight characters. But the storyline itself was broken in a sense that it was like different point of views. So, thank you for saying that. That was always my worry.
See, I like it when people do that. But I read fantasy, and that's a big thing in fantasy. They'll have a chapter be the name of the person, and it'll be their perspective, and the next chapter will switch to someone else. So I like that a lot.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, like Game of Thrones does that, and like, Stormlight Archives, they all do that where the chapter is about this person, and you know, because they're 1,000-page books, so they have so many characters, so each chapter's from someone else's perspective.
1,000-page books.
Thousand Pages. Oh my God. Are you reading Magician, Brad?
I'm not. I'm not. Is that the new one that everybody's talking about? It's like Golden Block.
No, Magician by Raymond E. Feist.
Is that it? Okay. Yeah, that's it.
That's like a classic. That is the classic.
Have you read that one?
I did. I grew up fantasy sci-fi.
Okay.
Horror was my second love. But yeah. That's a good field.
I did want to ask, with all the characters being in their perspectives, was it hard to differentiate? And, you know, this chapter is about Carly, so she needs to feel different from Regina. And what's the Japanese girl's name? Because I'm not going to pronounce it right either. Mimi, what's her full name, though?
Mimiko.
Mimiko, okay.
Japanese is so easy. It's just however you see it is how you pronounce it. That's a really good question.
Well, that's coming from someone who knows a bunch of languages, by the way.
I speak Kentucky and that's it.
Just say it like it sounds, Brad. That's a good point. I did, but do you know what is... So yes, I would normally say I have to get into a different frame of mind. But luckily, I've lived in all these places. And so I really tried to make sure that each character had the colloquialisms and the kind of character traits of like the country that they're from. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Japanese couple was a little bit difficult because I've never been Japanese Yakuza, Japanese mafia. I'm putting it out there to the world is that I have never had any interactions with Japanese mafia or Yakuza, sorry. Like the most I can ever remember is like when you are on a like downtown city in Tokyo and you see like shiny black sedans coming down this like very tiny street where it's like should only be pedestrians. And you see those cars and you see how nice they are. You just step to the side and you wait and you let them go. Like that is as far as I have been. Like that's as much as I know about Yakuza. Japanese mannerisms are quite unique. But then in one sense, they're very, like since they're so unique, it's easy to pick them out and kind of see what they are. I really had to pay attention to that, you know, Rocky was a Texas asshole. And, you know, luckily the characters were so distinct that it was really hard to muddle any of them up.
Yeah. I was going to say the first rule of Yakuza is not to talk about it. So you might get contacted later once this airs, just FYI.
It's like the Sicilian mafia. Like you don't even say the word.
You're not
like,
supposed to mention it. It doesn't exist.
You don't
exist.
Say the word. If you see something, no, you didn't.
Yeah. So I like the, I was, you know, reading up, trying to get some of your background and stuff. Where do you officially call home that you're from that you grew up? Is it Australia or?
Well, yes, I grew up in Australia. Okay. I like went through my adolescence in Australia. I wasn't born in Australia, but my mother is Australian. I have such a hard time when someone asks this question, Jay.
That's what I was getting from your website, which by the way, I mean, look, hey, shocker, we do some research for the show. So I was reading the website, you know, and it's like California, Australia, and everywhere in between, you know.
You know, I would say Australia is like my home. Because I definitely have like all the mannerisms of an Aussie still. But the truth is that I haven't actually lived in Australia for like over a decade. I left Australia in my mid-20s to move. I did my master's of linguistics and then I was offered this really great job in a university in Japan. And I had just gone through like a terrible breakup, and I was like, this is it. This is it. I'm leaving this country. And I didn't know anybody in Japan. I didn't know how to speak Japanese. I really hadn't even had any thoughts about traveling to Japan ever. But I just moved to Japan, and that was like the next session of my life. Like, it was great.
So do you feel like with Carly in the book, she is Australian. Did you feel like you're putting pieces of yourself in that character?
Yeah, probably.
Did you grow up on like a survivalist, like?
No, not at all. Not at all. I grew up in suburbia, but I will say that in my house, I am the person who kills the snakes and the wasps and the rats and the mice. And I am like the killer in my house. But I probably out of all the characters, I would identify with Kali the most. That's a good Vogue test. Like, which character do you identify with more?
You need to make up a test and then, yeah, make up a test and however your answer tells you, you know, which person you are at the end.
Well,
like the Texas heiress.
Because you said that, like earlier, we were trying to figure out a game for the show, and Brad was like, how about an Australian game about wildlife? I was like, where did that come from first? So I had to do a little, I had to look into what was going on and why.
She's a nature enthusiast and she's from Australia. So I thought the animals might be good. Something different than we normally do.
I could do it. I'm feeling actually pretty confident about that topic.
She said, bring it, Brad. Look, you want to do it? You can do it now. We're about halfway. We can do it now if you want to get the
we can do it now. Do you have questions? Do you have questions for Brad?
He gets so excited I happen to have some fun facts about Australia. But he's got the actual test questions. Let's do this.
All right, we'll play some Wildlife Down Under. Wildlife Down Under.
Wow. All right. First question for you.
What animal was that? It was a wallaby.
It was a wallaby. Yes.
Was so it?
I know what's up.
I know
everyone.
Are wallabies and kangaroos different?
Yes.
See,
they're
called
wallabies and kangaroos. They're two different names.
That's fair.
Oh, nice. They don't get along. They're rivals.
They don't get along. All right, we'll start with a softball, an easy one. What is a baby kangaroo called?
A Joey.
I knew that one.
And Jay, if she doesn't get one right, we'll let Jay guess and see.
I'm not going to know it. Come on,
Jay's,
dude. I'm
Jay's terrible at these games.
Oh, my gosh. What are you going to ask?
All right.
Okay, go.
Which of the following animals poop in cubes?
Well, wombats.
Dang, I didn't even have to give her the
she didn't even need a portable choice. That was one of my fun facts I was going to mention later too, by the way.
Like, is it really cubed like a sugar cube? Is that what it looks like? That just seems so strange.
Like a Rubik's cube.
Like a Rubik's cube.
There's no sharp edges.
Okay.
It's just like
colorful, like a Rubik's cube.
It's kind of in between a ball and a sphere and a cube, I would say.
Okay, that makes sense.
Doesn't animal pooping make
you
think that?
Wombat poop. That's what we're talking about this evening, everyone.
Do you want to know why they poop in cubes? I'll give you why.
Oh, sure.
It's because of their long and slow digestive system.
Well, I was kind of I know. I thought it was like a mind blowing reason here. And I was kind of let down, Brad. Jeez.
I'm sorry.
Okay, right. Next.
Which of the following spiders is the most poisonous? Is it the redback spider, brown recluse, wolf spider, or funnel web spider?
It's the redback.
Ooh, this says something different.
Well, all right. So funnel web, the Sydney funnel web. It might be the funnel web. I think the redback and probably the funnel web are the same.
Okay. This says it's the funnel web spider.
Okay. Yes, the funnel web would definitely, yeah, I guess. I mean, funnel webs are kind of big, but mm-hmm. the redback is like, I had a nest of redbacks in my garage when I was a teenager. The redbacks are like the size of the end of your finger. And they get, it's like, I mean, if you lived in Australia, like it would become second habit for you to like shake out your boots like every mm-hmm. whenever you put them on. But the funnel web is kind of like you can see it better. So I guess that's why I associate the redback and the redback. If you have seen two pictures of the redback and the funnel web side by side, like the typical like evil spider picture with like long sharp legs, that's the redback. I would say, yeah. Anyway, just my thoughts on spiders.
This episode of Spider Talk brought to you by Raid.
Jay, are you not a spider fan?
I'm you not, should definitely read In the Arctic Sun.
Yeah.
All right. Which of the following birds nest on the ground? A gray fantail, a corallus, a masked lapwing, masked lapwing, or a tree swallow?
I think you're making up words.
I have not heard of any of those birds.
One of them is also them known a gray fantail, a corellius, a mask lapwing, or a tree swallow.
All right, it's not the tree swallow.
Tree swallow.
It's not going to be.
The one that it is also known as a plover or plover.
Oh, the plover and corellius. Corellius?
Okay. Yep.
Yep. The plovers, yes, yes. They have I have big fantails. Yeah. Okay. I knew that one. I just Corellius. I've never heard that one before. That sounds like a Latin name for it.
I probably mispronounced it because I'm not, I can't read.
Oh, you're fine. Oh, this is fun. I am nailing this.
You are. We're getting schooled. It's like an educational episode.
Got any others, Brad? You want to try to stop me?
True or false? Koalas can be found in all states of Australia.
Are they in Tasmania? I would say no.
That's false. Correct. Koalas can be found in every state except for Tasmania.
Oh, nice. That's a bonus point because she knew where. Is that because they get ate by the...
No, it's because Tasmania is an island. It's like Hawaii to us. So, but yeah, they'll probably get destroyed by Tasmanian devils.
Probably. Yeah, but they bite pretty hard.
Fun fact.
Tasmanian it's one of my fun devils. Facts. If we get to it, it's one of my fun facts, Dave. Yeah.
Oh, no, how much fun it is. Is that... both koalas and Tasmanian devils have an STD, which are currently decimating their ranks.
Yes, they have like chlamydia, I think, that the koalas do, don't they?
Yes, chlamydia. I think koalas have chlamydia. And Tasmanian devils, I want to say, have something on their face. I forget. Anyway.
I watched a video with Steve Irwin's son. And he was talking to some guy who was holding a koala. He said, yeah, they all have chlamydia. And the guy was like, oh, great. Thanks. Here, take the koala back.
Nice. Yeah. We have a couple of koalas in our Columbus Zoo here.
And they have big claws too, don't they? Yeah. Don't they have like really big sharp claws too?
Oh, yeah. You don't want to fuck with a koala.
Koalas have. Honestly. That's a children's book. Way to go, Red. That's a children's book. Koalas have chlamydia. Hey, don't be surprised if she writes that and does the artwork for it too.
That could be like one of those like animal attack books, like The Roo, and I know there was a few other ones.
Maybe one about koalas. Maybe that's how we get drop bears. Drop bears are really koalas, like at the end of the chlamydia stage. That was funny.
All right, Tim, doing his I'm here all week kind of joke it's called? There.
Chlamydia.
Chlamydia. I'm here all week. All right, I got more.
All right, we'll do a few more. All which right. of the following birds can laugh? An emu, a kookaburra. Kookaburra, yeah.
Oh, well, in your face, man. And he worked. He worked hard on these all day. He was trying to.
I'm sorry. Do you want to hear? I can do. Okay.
No. Yeah.
Am I ever going to show? Do you want to hear it?
Yeah.
Can you do it?
Of course.
Yeah. All right. I think this is the wine talking.
That does sound like a.
That's going to be the sound bite when we promote the show for the rest of the weekend.
That's what a kookaburra sounds like. It's like someone laughing.
My kids watch the Wildcrats, Zaboomafoo, all the time, and they always have the kookaburra on there. So yeah, that sounds exactly like that.
Thank you. That's a great compliment.
Have you been practicing that one?
Oh, do you know what? I don't know why I can do that so well. I don't know. I mean, I grew up like with kookaburras like outside, so I don't know. It's just like hearing a rooster crow, you know?
Oh, are they that common? I didn't know they were that common.
Yeah, they're really common.
To stick with birds, which bird has the longest bill in the world? The Australian pelican? Do you already know?
No, keep going.
Okay. The Australian pelican, a curlew, stork, or toucan?
Well, now you're asking about like animals that aren't in Australia. I mean, I would say the Australian pelican.
The Australian pelican. It's 2 feet long. That's crazy.
Was that like that was a trap question?
That was a trap question.
She'll never come back now
because of that one, Brad.
I've seen pelicans. Sorry. I didn't know that there was a breed specifically Australian pelicans. But yeah, I would believe that. Pelicans are vicious.
We'll do one final one. So we talked about the world's deadliest or the world's most poisonous spider. So which is the world's most venomous snake?
Is it the... no, I'm sorry. You're going to give me multiple choice.
I mean, if you already know, you can go ahead. Is it the black mamba, the eastern brown snake, the death adder, or the inland taipan?
The inland taipan.
Inland taipan. See, I don't pronounce that. That's right, the inland taipan.
Uh-huh.
Most toxic venom of all snakes.
Uh-huh.
I think, did you get them all? You got them all, didn't you?
I think she got them all, yeah. Some of them I didn't even do multiple choice. She just did it.
Well, I just happen to have some Australian fun facts, but reading through these, I don't know how fun they are. Just FYI.
Okay. How deadly Australia is?
Yes, because some of them are kind of vicious and may end up in a horror book somewhere. Did you know there are 3 times as many sheep than people in Australia?
We asked Mark Taus that question. And he didn't know.
Okay. This is just the internet. You know, I could be totally wrong. I just Googled it, but still.
I have heard that statistic before, but that statistic was for New Zealand. I did not know, but I would believe it. I would believe it for Australia because it has the world's biggest ranches in there, like ranches the size of American states. So, yeah, I would believe that. Sheep shearing was a big thing in the early 1900s, like sheep shearing sheds. Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't believe that. 66 million sheep sounds like a lot, though.
That does
sound like a lot.
Yeah.
All right, what's the next one?
Sounds like a lot of poop. The Australian emu.
Yes.
Can run as fast as 45 kilometers an hour, and for those in the States, that's 28 miles per hour.
Thanks for the conversion, because I didn't know.
I believe that.
Google did it for me, so it's like, okay, here we go.
That's crazy.
I did not know this one. Platypus. They're highly poisonous. I didn't know that. They have enough poison to kill a dog or make a human seriously ill. Did you know that?
Of course she did.
No, I'm talking about, did you know, Brad? I didn't know it.
Yeah, they have a little spur I forget where their Spurs are, though. It's probably somewhere around their web. So they have webbed feet, and they have Spurs somewhere here, I think. But yeah. Hmm. Yeah, that's a good one.
That's crazy.
Here's one. Because you were talking about snakes earlier and stuff. The box jellyfish, which is found in the waters of the Great Barrier Reef. Mm-hmm. Responsible for more deaths than snakes, sharks, and saltwater crocodiles combined.
Yep.
A sucker is deadly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really good one. And if you ever go up to the Great Barrier Reef, when I was 18, I moved up to the Barrier Reef and I worked on a yacht. And I was really shocked to learn that when, like, tourists, anybody swimming in the water of the Great Barrier Reef, like, you cannot go into the water without a wetsuit.
Really?
Like, yeah. even just around the beach, like, oh, hey, I'm taking my dream vacation to the Barrier Reef and I bought like a really cute bikini. No, you cannot go into the water bareskin.
Wow.
See, I told you these were not really fun facts, even though they're titled fun facts.
They're interesting facts.
They're a little scary.
Australia is a very interesting place. And I don't know, my husband, when we were first dating, he came from Afghanistan. He was like, he came on a 2-week vacation from Afghanistan. And he was more afraid of Australia than Afghanistan.
Wow.
Well, I'm assuming he's from Afghanistan, so that was just, you know, he's not scared of his own place, or is he?
No, he's okay. He's military.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
Scary. The record jump recorded by a kangaroo.
We're still going.
9 meters, which is 30 feet for us in the States here. 30 mm-hmm. feet, kangaroo. That's the record jump. Mm-hmm. That's Michael Jordan numbers. That's
you could do fun facts about Australia all night.
Yeah. All right. One more because we were talking about koalas earlier.
Got it.
Koalas sleep for about 20 hours a day.
True. It's the eucalyptus.
Yeah.
It's the actual food they eat makes them so tired. They got.
I'm lucky if we get 20 hours a week, but there they are sleeping 20 hours a day. That's nice. Those were my fun facts. That some of these were kind of brutal. I don't know.
Hey, I learned their
interpretation of fun. So
those were good. Thank you.
All right, you're off the hot seat about Australia now, okay?
So have you written anything set in Australia, like short stories or anything?
Yeah, yeah. Do you know my first short story I ever wrote and I ever submitted and it sold the first time was to Jill Girardi of Candisha Press. She took mm-hmm. my okay. first short story and she wrote a really nice message that was so helpful to a new author, and that is set in the bush. That is a good tale of revenge.
Nice. What's it called?
It was in the book anthology The One That Got Away. And I think I've got to go onto my own website.
I'm sorry. I totally put you on the spot.
No, what was it called? Well, no, I'm going to be like, I can't believe
she knows all the Australian facts, but she needs to look
at her own books.
Do you know what, guys? I've just written so much. Like,
I know, right.
That's right. Yeah.
It's what I threw away. I forgot about. You know.
That one was called Date Night Ablaze. Their Candisha Press has really fun stories and she's coming back now, which is great. Mm-hmm. I know she took a break for a year.
So you were talking about earlier that you like to write stories like in these extreme settings like the Arctic. You have your short story in Australia. Are there any other locations you haven't written a story yet that would like be an extreme environment you'd like to tackle?
Great question. My next story, I think, is going to be the one. Yeah, I'm writing my next novel now. It's going very slow, but Colorado mountains are pretty. I mean, we say Colorado mountains, and we think of like aspen, and, mm-hmm. you know, all the popular ski places. But the Colorado Mountains are really big. Yeah. Like, they are literally half of the state is just the Rockies, you know. And if you look at it on Google Maps, you can see there's just a million, you know, dikes and valleys that just don't have anything. It's far from a road. And I can really see that being an extreme location in like the start of winter time. And
going back
really
to the cold weather again.
Well, no, I mean, but cold weather really kind of is like nature's isolating blanket, yeah. you know? I mean, there's so much you can't do once it starts snowing, and especially in the mountains. Well,
don't the mountains have like snow most of the year anyway? So, because they're so far
with
so high up.
Global warming now, I don't know. Most of them have their white caps. Their peaks are white, but it's actually Colorado's really nice in the summertime. It's like my ideal dream retirement place.
Colorado is your retirement place?
Yeah, probably. It's my dream.
Is Yellowstone in Colorado or is it somewhere else?
No, I would love to retire to Colorado, the Colorado Mountains. Yeah, let's just hope I don't scare myself out of it with the next book.
Stranded on top of a mountain and yeah, I can see it now.
Are you pulling folklore into this new one as well, or is it just
no.
something different?
No, not no folklore. This one's going to be sci-fi cannibalism.
Okay.
Stuck in the mountains, they have to eat. I mean, come on.
They do. I don't know. I haven't finished it yet. And I don't know. I don't want to put something out into the universe that's not going to come true. And maybe it'll
it's just the idea in your head now. Or how do you approach a story? Do you have anything written down for it, or do you have some post-its? Or
you know, when I wrote my previous novels, right, I did not have a day job. The way I wrote novels was so absolutely crazy and so unsustainable, but it worked. I wrote Foxfire in a month, and it was really fast because I had all these great ideas, and if I didn't get them onto paper, it would just kind of flitter away. But now I'm working like a 9-to-5, and it's really hard to get that creative time and that headspace for me. And so, especially if I have, you know, short story obligations for anthologies, like I do, it's even more difficult. So it's like, when is the next book coming out? It's like, when I take like a 2-week vacation and I just write myself to death, that'll be the next book.
So in the Arctic Sun, did you write it quick too?
Sorry. Oh yeah. Yeah. That was the same. That was a month.
Wow.
So it sounds like when you start one, you're with it until you got to finish it.
Yeah.
No breaks. No, yeah. None that takes you 2 or 3 years because you keep going back to nothing like that.
And you know what? That's probably very consistent with my style because I have a short story coming out with Dark Matter, their Halloween special. And it's the best creature feature I've ever written. And I came up with a really great idea in an hour or 2 hours. And I just had to write it and it came out really good. And I think I kind of timed it. I'm like, oh yeah, I wrote this in 10 hours. And then you like go back and you spend twice that editing, but that's kind of my MO.
But you know, you're making some people mad right now that take forever to write.
I don't those sell everything.
Two or three years has taken me to write a book, but no, Rowan could do it in a month. It's taking,
but not all of them sell. That's the thing, right? And everybody's process is different. Like the people who take 2 or 3 years, like John Langan, wrote The Fisherman, and in his back, like, acknowledgments, he say, it took me 12 years to write this. And I can see that because, and I've said this on another, like, to other people, is that every sentence in that man's book is artwork. Like, there's nothing passive in that. It's all so evocative. The imagery is in every line. And I can see 12 years well spent in The Fisherman. So everybody is different. And there's no right or wrong way to write a book. Yeah.
With you writing so quick, do you have like an outline going into it, or do you pants it and just make it up as you go along?
No, with this, I mean, I actually, you know, I am a big fan of reverse engineering. So if I know where I want to go and I have like an explosive ending or long sequence, I do have to reverse engineer. So I make sure I set up clues in the start. So I do have to outline my stories. How people pants it, I don't know. It's amazing. It's like a superhero trait to me. It's just like, I'm just going to be like Stephen King and write this amazing, incredible novel off the back of my
head. I wrote 450 pages today. Straight from my head.
That guy.
So take us back to the beginning. What got you into writing? Like, were you a writer when you were younger? Did you read a lot when you were younger? Something had to start this. How'd you get into horror or sci-fi or fantasy or whatever you want to write? How did you get into that?
I think my first movie, I'll never forget, my dad left me alone in our living room. And he like went out to smoke a cigarette. This was back when he was smoking cigarettes. He has given that up now. But he left me. He turned on Killer Clowns from Outer Space, and he left me alone. He left me alone when I was like 9 or 10 years old, and so that was probably the start of like knowing that horror was a different genre. And then I actually didn't have any interest to write until I was probably about maybe 10 years ago. I had just written my dissertation, like for my doctorate, and I was like so over that style of writing, like academic writing. and it was so thank you, Tim. I'm glad you find that hilarious.
It should be a prerequisite for life, it's funny for everybody else.
Yeah, for any writer, a prerequisite I can't talk tonight, sorry, should be Killer Clowns from Outer Space. That's a good one.
But I had just written my dissertation, and anybody who's done that process knows that it like kills it. Something dies inside of you after the dissertation process. And I was in this was, and you know, this was the height of the refugee crisis in Syria. And I was laying, we were kind of traveling the country, my husband and I, because we were in the process of moving from Honolulu to Japan. And I was laying in like his grandmother's bed looking at the ceiling, and I heard this story about this Syrian refugee who was a doctor. He was like a neurosurgeon in Syria, and then he came to America as a refugee, and he was, the only job he could get was driving taxis. And I have a big soft, like, I have a lot of feelings about refugees, you know, because we saw a lot of them when I was younger in Australia, and we had a lot of African refugees coming over at that time. And so I was just lying, thinking about this neurosurgeon turned taxi driver. I'm like, what the hell are we gonna, like, if alien refugees ever came, what the hell are we gonna treat them like when we can't even treat like people, our own species, well? And I kind of came up with a story, like in one night of, like, it was kind of like a noir they live sort of alien refugees coming to Earth. Mm-hmm. And they seem nice, but they're not. And I wrote that book on and off over a year or 2 years. And, you know, it's a trunk novel, like it never got any traction, but that would kind of was the start of my writing. Mm-hmm. And then I wrote a piece. I was like, oh, I got to get off of this like big novel I'm writing. It was like 100, like that science fiction alien refugee was like 120,000 words. And I started something. I'm like, oh, I should write something short and small. And I saw, I don't know how I saw it. I was like on Facebook and I saw a call for short stories and I wrote something and it was really dark. It was like, it was like, there was really a lot of taboo subjects in there. And I didn't really realize how dark it was until like I forwarded it to my friend and he's like, fucking hell, Shannon. Nice. And then I was like, okay, so I'll just try another story. But yeah, that was kind of the start of
it's cool when your own writing freaks you out a little bit. Like, wow, this is dark.
Well, it didn't at the time. I don't know why it didn't. I wrote it and it was like necrophilia mixed with like serial killer in a morgue. And I don't know why I didn't realize
how you still have it. Do you still have it? Are you gonna go back to it and work on it?
No, I can't think of any publication that would take it. The only publication that might take it would be either Clash.
I was gonna say Clash.
if they ever do an anthology, I might have something for them. Or Clash or Evil Cookie. It would be the only two I can imagine that would take
it. Weird Punk Books might take it. They do anthologies sometimes.
This is maybe a little bit too dark for like I've read a lot of their books. I don't know. Anyway, it's in there somewhere. Maybe it'll see the light one day.
Have you ever thought of doing your own collection?
I do have a collection. It's ready and waiting for somebody.
Oh, it's ready.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is the necrophilia story in your own collection?
Not at all. It's too. Well, you know, there's some. You know what's right for one publisher isn't right for another. Yeah. Some of them.
You already self-published it.
I don't. I know that. That is a very good point. You could self-publish, and many people have, but I have something broken inside of me where I need validation from other people. I need someone to take a collection and say, hey, yeah, I'll publish this. I think you are worthy of like this. Your writing is worthy of publication and I will invest in that. And that's something in my brain that's like, and plus self-publishing is so hard. It's so hard to do. I see all the work that goes into it. And I know that I don't have that kind of time. And I don't know if I'm like well enough known to sell anything. Anyway, there's a lot of dark thoughts up here.
I think you're well enough known if you self-pubbed your collection or something that people would definitely pick it up.
I don't know. There's that broken thing again where I like somebody else needs to like publish this.
I did want to ask. So I haven't read In the Arctic Sun. So I might be way off base, so correct me if I'm wrong, but with the synopsis of that and then with Foxfire, I felt like there was a bit of a common theme of like preserving nature in a way. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. Do you know what? Before I like settled down and my husband caught me, I was a big nature enthusiast. Mm-hmm. You know, I have like hiked many mountain ranges in this world and I quite enjoy going off grid, and that never was scary, but now I look back at it and I was like, oh, I could have fucking died like a million times. Like, why did I think it was such a good idea to go without a phone in the Annapurnas of Nepal for a month? I do like nature, and I enjoy the idea of nature having agency and being able, like, kind of like revenge for nature, right? Like, we fucked it up so bad, and now it's like taking its own. I do enjoy that theme. I do like a lot of eco horror, but I don't think that is the same as nature horror.
Yeah, I can see a difference. Yeah, now that you say it that way.
Eco horror is a lot associated with, like, you know, the upcoming apocalypse and the demise of humans via nature. And nature is just like, nature has like some agency in it. I don't know.
Yeah, because it's developing. With Foxfire was definitely, you know, this land is sacred. We don't want to, you know, build more stuff on here, bring more people in. You know, we want to leave it the way it is and not change it. And I felt that. And from the synopsis of In the Arctic Sun, it was something like digging for oil or something. I felt like it's kind of the same connection there, where they're messing with the land when they shouldn't be.
Yeah, I do find that, yeah, maybe that comes, I think that might be like something unconscious that I bring in to my writing. I do that often.
Did you feel like, you wanted to read a little snippet or something of Foxfire to tease people?
I could do that. I did pull up something before. my screen is so bright. It's like, sure. Okay, so this is nearly the middle of the book, and it is a section where somebody gets killed. So there is a light gore warning, I guess. Maybe, I forget. I don't know. If you're squirmish, like, just mute me right now. A hand, ungloved, clawed his scalp and lifted it to meet his eyes. Lempo, the angry, vengeful god of wilderness, stared at him. Those eyes were feral and wild and cursed, reminding him of all the bad things he had done in this life. Not terrible, but not right. Did anyone try to be terrible in this short life? Blood left his body, life falling into the pitch water beneath, and something stirred in his memory as the cold seeped up from his booted toes. A story of his father in the lake. His father had taken his final sleep in the lake. Cold crawled up his leg with icicles for fingers. And something about sacrifice, his family, their blood, his blood. The devastating chill curled his guts and dinner solid, until it was a hefty weight sitting in his body like a large stone. There was a story of the lake and the forest and his family and their duty and their protection and their custodianship over sacred land that should never be taken or stolen or used ill. His chest, with its broken organ, slowed, and Matthias stared dreamily at the Reventulet, a flare of red unexpectedly surging through the green. He was dreaming. Matthias no longer felt his legs or body, but had the distinct sensation of vertigo as Lempo lifted the two heavy feet and he fell through the frigid air to the frozen water. He choked the terrible, numbing water, surprised to discover his body, nearly devoid of life, still floated. Ushered down the fast-moving river, ice cut his body through, though he did not notice much as he was transfixed by the celestial light. The water rumbled, the riverbed churned, and sound and movement shuddered everything everywhere all at once, and Matthias could only lax into numbness. Above, emerald, lush, and wild clashed with primal vermilion. They enameled the sky in broad strokes, guiding his way. They showed him the path and faces took shape within the Reventulet. Beautiful, terrible faces, horrific, familiar faces, bears, wolverines, foxes, reindeer, wolves, lynx, seals, figures of lore, ancient, terrible deities floating in the sky in the gateway to heaven or hell, waiting to take Matthias into the dark memories of his lineage. Finn.
Nice. Nice. That was a good selling snippet. October 10th, right?
It was.
Is that
October 10th?
October 10th, Bayou Wolf Press, right?
Yeah, you can pre-order it now. Yeah. Just saying.
I was messaging Jay earlier. I was just telling him I was having a lot of fun with this. Like, it felt totally like an hour and a half long slasher movie. Like, I could totally see this as a film being turned into as a slasher film. I think it'd make an awesome movie.
Well, thank you for saying that. From your lips to God's ears one day, maybe. I do enjoy writing stories that take place in one location.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One location is just so much easier.
So we're going to, as the evening starts winding down, I know you have to get to your interview with the vampire series tonight. That's pretty cool.
Thank you.
We really appreciate you spending Saturday evening or night with, what time is it where you are? Are you the same time zone?
I'm in East Coast. I'm in the Virginias.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we're the same. Oh, so you got time to get ready, get your popcorn ready, watch your show. Where can people find you? Where can they stalk you on Twitter, Instagram, all the fun stuff?
Yeah, you can find me there. I'm everywhere. I've got the accounts on the other social medias for Twitter's eventual decline. But yeah, I'm on Facebook now. And yeah, what's just Facebook? writer Rowan Hill, wherever you are, I am.
Give us a little final pitch for Foxfire to make everybody go out and buy.
Oh. Foxfire. I actually like the way I sold it. I was like, it's Hateful Eight and Agatha Christie on crack and the ritual in Lapland. You want Texans? I got them. You want Yakuza? Check. You want fiery
mark next to everything, yeah.
You want fiery spitballs who use swords? Got them. We got bows and arrows and swords and guns and assassins and there's everything. There's everything
you
really in there.
You do have everything in there, don't you?
Yeah.
It's a fun book. It's a lot of fun.
And Foxfire.
I like that it didn't end the way I was expecting because I was expecting just a straight slasher, but you did something different. I don't want to say what happens, but I like that it wasn't what I was expecting.
I do try that. That is like purposeful. I try to like, what were you expecting? Oh, I'm going to do the opposite of that.
And it had like a Knives Out vibes where like everyone.
I was going to say, I could think of a movie, but I was thinking that just now. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's and everyone a good had one. Like a secret. No one really knew who everyone else was. I don't know.
That's a good comparison. I hadn't thought of that one before. Yeah, Knives Out. Everyone's got a secret. No one knows the whole story. It's pieced together throughout their things. That's a great one.
And I want to say this because you read from Matthias's perspective. I'm sure you've seen the movie Frozen. If you have, the guy who like runs the little shack with like the they go in and like it's when the snow first starts, he's going in to get his carrots and his rope or whatever. He's like he stands up and he's huge. That's who I pictured Matthias being. He's got like his family in the sauna on the side.
Oh, the sauna. Yeah, the sauna.
The sauna guy. Yeah, that's who I pictured as Matthias. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. That just popped in my head.
I don't think I ever would have thought of that, Brad. That's like unique to Brad.
Frozen as a horror movie. That's Frozen just as a horror movie. Redo it. Yeah.
Because my kids, like, I've probably seen that like 1,000 times just subconsciously because it's always on. The kids are always watching it. But that's who I picture as Matthias was the little nice guy. And then he gets mad and throws him out.
Got it.
All that
stuff. I caught it.
That's my 2 cents. I'll shut up now.
Foxfire, it's releasing October 10th. Bayou Wolf Press. You can pre-order it now, you said, right? And it's going to be everywhere you can buy books.
No, yeah.
Yeah. So, Rowan Hill, everybody, thank you so much for joining
us. Thank you so much, Brad and Jay. This was really with us. Fun.
We appreciate it. Hopefully, everybody goes out. I think they will go out after reading that little snippet there, because I was kind of grabs you a little bit. So, this was fun. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Everyone in the chat, thank you for hanging out with us this evening.
Thank you, Tim. And thank you for blurbing, Tim. You are wonderful and kind.
That's a wrap, everyone. This is
a wrap.
Awesome, fun book. Go check it out. Fun in that gory, slasher, kind of bloody, horrific way. This one okay?
is fun. I was saying last episode the book was fun. And it wasn't really fun. It was a really good book. But this one is fun.
Yeah, he was last one was the depressing book we were talking about.
A very depressing book.
And he was like, this is a fun book. So I don't know where that
came from. It's so hard to describe sometimes. Like, it was a very enjoyable, well-written book, but fun isn't the right word. This one is fun.
Yeah.
Fun slasher. I liked it a lot.
There you have it. We're in it with that. It's a fun book. Pick it up.
It's a fun book.
See you guys. Until next time.
Thanks for hanging out. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Love you, Jay.
I know you do. All right.